The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, now we're joined by transport commentator Conor Faulkner. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Hello.
So many transport stories knocking around at the moment,
there
but
are,
let's start
yeah.
with the first one. A suggestion in this time of high energy costs and fuel costs that you could reduce the motorway speed limit to 110 kilometres per hour from 120 to save fuel.
Yeah, it wouldn't do much good. So it's actually not worth the effort of doing it. And that's the conclusion of TII. I think it's a good conclusion. The proposal was put forward a few times, but most recently in the spring by the Green Party. And they said it again, I think, in July. Superficially, you can kind of see what the idea is. But when they modelled it, there are a couple of interesting things. Firstly, it didn't save that much fuel relatively, nor that much time. But the interesting thing is they modelled that people would divert off artificially low-speed motorways, use alternative routes instead, and on the model that actually led to an increase in traffic crashes. So, you know, I don't know how that model would play out, but it's one of the reasons I think why an idea that really wasn't worth doing has been shelved.
And the amount of fuel that would be saved would be tiny in the context of the greater problem.
Tiny in the context of the greater problem, yeah.
Okay, so let's park that one if you'll
right place for it. Right place for it.
Now, we have data on traffic and vehicle movements, haven't we?
Yeah, and for me the data is interesting because this is the first time we have a genuine comparison pre-pandemic versus post-pandemic. Quarter two of this year is the first direct comparator. So there's no point looking at 2021, a totally anomalous year, but we can compare it to 2019. And what does it tell us? It tells us that road deaths are genuinely up, which is obviously a worry. And on the traffic flow, general traffic is down, quite a good bit down. It's 12% down overall. Most of that is private cars. The trucks and HGVs they're down a little bit, but, you know, they're on the road. So I think what it's telling us is remote working. I think that's the single biggest factor there. And if that's true, Pat, that might be the shape of things to come. We might actually see a post-pandemic world with far fewer traffic jams than we had before, and maybe that'll be a good thing.
Yeah. I noticed this morning the traffic was up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously people returning from holidays. So
yeah.
the next quarter when schools are back
is the
might tell
one.
Us a bit more.
Yeah, is the big one. September is traffic season, kind of always was. So we'll know in the autumn what
now,
the real effect is.
E-scooters and collisions.
Yeah, again, with proper data. When you talk about e-scooters, there's loads of anecdotes. They break the lights, they mount footpaths. Those things are lethal. We now have a little bit of data, and it comes from the Gardaí, and it's over the last 2.5 years, and they say they've logged 440 incidents involving e-scooters with injuries of, you know, from the serious all the way down to the very minor. 440 they've counted. So that's a significant number, and I would expect that it will grow because the more of these things we have on the road.
I mean, the numbers, just to do the comparison, between the start of this year and the end of July, there were 453 e-scooter traffic incidents, which compares to 640 for all of 2021, and in 2020, only 280. So it tells us about the growth of
it
the
does.
E-scooter.
And unlike other traffic data, we don't have pre-pandemic stats to look at because the technology is really only just arriving. And it's here in waves. And I think it's statistically inevitable that the more people use this technology, the more people are going to fall off. And hence, we will see that sort of data. By the way, cyclists have always complained that data on injury to cyclists is never properly kept, unless it's really, really serious, that just the incident isn't logged. So, maybe if we start tracking these data properly, for e-scooters and bikes alike, that's bound to be helpful.
Yeah, I just wonder, do they do the same for motor cars? Don't track it. You know, if you get a bit of whiplash, for example,
well,
is that recorded by anybody?
Well, it is, and it's there on insurance databases as well, so there's plenty of... If you claim, but it gives you a data set from which you can be pretty confident about your stats for the country.
But
far less so with bikes.
The worry is, in these collisions, two people have died and 42 more suffered serious injuries from collisions involving e-scooters. Now, we don't know whether that's to the e-scooter owner, the rider, in other words, or whether it's to a third party.
We don't know the circumstances, and we don't know all sorts of other things, like alcohol, for example, that turns up in road safety deaths everywhere, whether it's pedestrians.
I think internationally, there was a report, I think, from Germany saying many of the people on e-scooters when stopped by the police were out of their minds on drink.
And you can easily see how that happens. You come out of the pub at night and think, it'll be no bother, I'll hire an e-scooter. And they're turning up in the data for all those reasons. So as we go forward, post-pandemic and into the new world, world, you know, we will be having e-scooter conversations over and over again as people get used to them being around.
Now, on regular road deaths, the numbers are a bit worrying. 22 more deaths in 2022 than at a similar time last year. Now, you can say the pandemic and less driving and so on, but it's more than that, I think.
It is more than that. The numbers are creeping back up again, and we're at, well, it looks like 99 or 100 road deaths so far this year, which is a very disappointing mark to pass. So it is a worry. It is a serious worry. By context, as we said before in this spot, Pat, we got road deaths down to a really, really low number. I mean, statistically, amongst the very best countries in their world. That's to our credit. It's very difficult to get better than that. And it can easily drift. And unfortunately, the first half of this year, including quarter two of this year, which is our, you know, again, our real post-pandemic, pre-pandemic comparator, the numbers are drifting up. So that's a big challenge for Gardaí, for the Road Safety Authority, for the government, yeah.
Now, your old alma mater, I suppose I could call it, the AA, has released a survey about people leaving the car at home if public transport was better. What are they saying?
Yeah, it's a good piece of work. It's a survey of 4,500 of their members. So it's a good chunky size, larger than you'd usually see in these things. And it sort of tells us what we know. In the urban areas, people are willing to take public transport. They're likely to take it as an option. What it really shows is the rural divide. In rural Ireland, there simply isn't the public transport option. The number of people who can avail of it, even if they need to drive to it, is disappointingly small, and it lays out the scale of the challenge. And it sort of tells you what you're telling a rural citizen when you say to them, don't use diesel, buy a bicycle.
They laugh.
Well, it's a slightly bitter laugh at this stage because it's pretty tone deaf to their actual situation. And it again dramatises the public transport challenge. But if we want to be optimistic, the e-scooters in the cities, that could be really, really helpful. That could take an awful lot of pressure out of the transport system. And it's entirely possible that when we're having the transport debate in the future, it won't be about rush hour in the cities. It'll be about how people move themselves around in rural Ireland, in communities, etc.
Now, moving on to a proposal that I certainly won't live to see its completion. By 2070, there will be a major new car-free town to the west of Dublin.
Yeah, the Irish Times today. It's out along the Naas Road, and it's an enormous site. And people who know Dublin will, it's more than one site, but there's actually an awful lot of underused land there, Pat. What they classically describe as brownfield, semi-commercial, barely used at all. And it's on the Lewis Line, so it's an ideal location for housing. So the plan laid out is for an enormous development of housing, where they'll start initially with 3,500 units, and that's to be in place by 2030. But then long term, they're laying out a vision that by 2070, there'll be, I think, 70,000 units built, and a population the size of Galway.
Apartment blocks will have no car parks.
Yeah, and this is, I suppose, a statement of future intent. But the idea is that there will be no parking at all provided for any of these apartments. And some people will clap and applaud at that, and others will say, "Oh, come on! You know, this is still an actual city in which we live. We might wish it was a perfect city, but it clearly isn't." And to allow for no parking facilities at all, maybe something that we come to regret, I would think.
Because there are times when
there's a genuine need. I mean,
and what happens if you happen to be wheelchair bound?
Well, the exception they make is for people with accessibility needs.
So but again, suppose I want to visit you and I'm wheelchair bound.
Yeah, exactly. Or I want to bring you a supply of groceries or whatever it might be. There will be occasional car need. Where car use is really wasteful is where one person uses a car to commute and clogs up the roads while they do so. Even forget about the climate. These could all be electric cars, but that's where it's wasteful, is where it causes congestion. So if you've got good cycling facilities, good public transport, you don't need to stop that happening because people will do it. But there will be occasional car use requirements, and I think there still will be in 2070.
I mean, when you've got good transport infrastructure in London, for example, people just won't bother having a car. Well, it's too expensive, and they have the alternative of a taxi service which operates through the night, both the black cab and the mini cabs
exactly
and all that.
I often say to people, when was the last time you hired a car in London? It absolutely wouldn't occur to you because you assume you can get on the transport system and go where you want to go. There's no reason why Dublin can't have a transport system that good. Other European cities of comparable size do. And that should be the vision rather than, you know, looking to police cars out of the equation
There's a kind of a blindness also to the capacities of the transport infrastructure we have. Mm. I mean, we're told, oh, you can build loads of houses there because the Lewis line is nearby. Now, the Lewis happens to be full when it's going through this barren land upon which more houses will be built. So you're saying, well, unless you can improve the frequency of the Lewis, and given that, we will have Metro North and all of that, but when you're trundling on streets rather than underground, the frequency is very limited.
Inherently so. And, you know, ultimately that will have, if we're talking about 2070, ultimately that will have to be a metro. It should have been a metro when we built it first. I always regarded On Street as the original compromise. And while Lewis is terrific, in the next 50, 70, 100 years of the city's life, we are going to need a metro system, unless the world changes in ways that nobody can envisage. But, you know, that hasn't happened yet. Yeah. And Dublin, I think, praise them for looking at a vision that rolls out to 2070, but there's an awful lot of stuff that we could be doing right now and we aren't.
This is what they say about this City Edge project. Mm. While the area is served by the Lewis Red Line, buses and a rail station at Park West, growing the area will require the development of the Lucan Lewis Line, which is included in the Greater Dublin Area Transport Strategy, as well as a rail station at Kylemore, a new Lewis stop on the Naas Road, and potentially a new Lewis Line to Kimmage.
It will need all that and more, I would envisage, and ultimately a proper underground line, serving an underground line going from the city centre to Tala to Clondalkin. Ultimately, the city will build something like that. Whether it's done by 2070 or not, I don't know. Judged on our pace so far, it seems unlikely.
There is no time than now that will be cheaper to dig.
Exactly.
And that's always the case. Whenever now is, it's never going to be cheaper.
Classic example is the Port Tunnel. The price of the Port Tunnel was extremely controversial in 2000, 2001, 2002. Ultimately, it came in at 750 million euro. Seamus Brennan at the time was roasted for the expense. It looks dirt cheap now. Dirt cheap now. And had we built Metro, etc., we'd be having the same conversation. So the best time to start this was 30 years ago. Second best time is now.
As some of the comments and questions coming in, doing a 4-hour round trip, it's clear not many keep to the speed limits. People want to overtake at the most dangerous spots and they tailgate. Mm. That's from Paul. Well, on motorways, that shouldn't really happen.
Less so. That is true. It's entirely true what has been said. It is less true on motorways than on any other road. Where that really is true is on stretches that are, say, 80 kph, single carriageway road, reasonably good but quite slow. And there you'll have drivers frustrated, trying to get past the truck, going for overtaking manoeuvres. They're inherently dangerous, those roads, much more so than the motorways.
And another one, speed reduction does help fuel economy. According to the instant fuel readout on my 2012 Mondeo, 65 miles per hour or 105 kilometres per hour gives the best trade-off between speed and fuel consumption. That's from Kevin.
True. And for the ordinary driver, use your cruise control and stay below the speed limit. And that treats the engine with perfect sympathy. And it is the most economic way to travel. Yeah. And if you square that up across 2 million private cars and all the commercial vehicles, etc., in aggregate, it does make a very, very big effect. But as I say, when the TII modelled it, the effect of applying the speed limit reduction on motorways, when you calculate it through, it's really, really tiny. Let's go for policies that actually are impactful. But in the meantime, advising people to drive sensibly is very good for fuel efficiency, apart from anything else.
When you drive an electric car, it's very clear where your sweet spot is because you can actually watch the battery capacity and its predicted duration for your journey. And if you go down, I think they say for an electric car, for many of them, about 90 kilometres an hour gives you the maximum. So if you're not in a hurry,
That's where to be. And you can do that with a diesel car as well. An experienced driver will do it just from, you know, feeling the engine and the revs that it's making. But you can also look at, you know, there are driver devices that will do the same thing. The message is the same. Drive sensibly and slowly in the sweet spot for the engine and for the road. And that is the safest and most efficient way to drive.
Has Conor any news on the long-awaited proposed Kilmoon bypass?
No, to be honest. Still part of the conversation, so I'm afraid I don't.
I was hit from behind by a guy speeding on an e-scooter on Henry Street, which incidentally happens to be pedestrian only. Mm. I was very close to the GPO end, not a guard in sight. Luckily, I wasn't injured, but very shocked. I'm 68 years of age, and now I'm very nervous about going into town anymore.
Yeah.
Since the last fuel crisis, I've been driving in the economical manner suggested by the Department of Transport press release at the time. I don't know how I can economize any further. Mm. A child that is born today lives to a good age of 100, probably won't see the city edge either. Since this is no parking in this new town, where do your visitors park, or will visitors be banned? They will cycle, yeah, or they will take public transport.
Yes, indeed. Your 90-year-old grandmother can perfectly easily cycle an e-bike to the Lewis, wedge herself on and walk the last kilometre. She'll be fine.
John says a 2070 plan is basically a way of government saying it won't be our problem, but we can make the flashy promises.
Well, I'm in favour of far-sighted plans, and often the opposite is the problem. Governments only think election to election, so I don't criticise them for long-term planning. There's stuff that still has to be carried through on, and that can be the frustration.
All right, look, Conor, thank you very much for joining us, transport commentator Conor Faulknan.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.